Hello, my name is Nicholas Webb, and welcome to Where Paths Cross. This is my podcast which aims to share different experiences and to improve understanding of different perspectives. We're at a point in history where we seem to have a lot of tribalism, certainly in our politics, at times even in society at large. And I want this podcast to play its own little role in trying to get away from that and to understand each other a little bit more. It's impossible to walk a mile in somebody else's shoes, but you can give up a few minutes to listen to their perspective via this podcast. If you want to get in touch with me, you can find me online, ndweb.com, or on Twitter at ndweb. I hope you enjoy the programme. I was invited to meet the Social Democratic Party and record a podcast. The SDP are contesting the Newport West by-election. Ian McLean is their candidate. And I had a chat with their party leader and one of their senior officers to talk about how a party that many people were aware of in the 1980s, but has been relatively quiet recently, has got to the position where they are contesting this by-election. And I think it's very easy in Newport West to look at the 2017 election result, where all but Labour and Conservatives lost their deposit, had less than 5% of the vote. In fact, they all had well beneath 5% of the vote, other than the big two, to see this as a two-horse race and to talk in those terms. And I've certainly done that myself. But there's something interesting about the overall direction, the big picture direction of British politics. If you look at some of the emerging parties that are contesting, who are realistically unlikely to be victorious on April the 4th, but who have got an interesting message, something slightly different to say. They're parties who might not stand in Newport West if it was a general election right across the country, but because the focus is on one constituency, we get to see a very different insight into the political dynamic. And I think it is worth drilling down a little bit and trying to understand a bit more about some of these parties who are standing. So it was a great opportunity to meet with the SDP. I was really appreciative of them giving me their time to have a chat. As with the last podcast where I spoke to the Renew Party, it was in a public setting. We were in a coffee shop, so there's some background noise. I apologise for that. I've had a listen through. I think you can clearly hear throughout the conversation that we were having, and I don't think there's too much background noise, and I don't think we picked up anybody else's conversation, which is always good. So I hope you enjoy listening and perhaps find out a little bit more about the SDP, their candidate Ian McLean, who is standing in the Newport West by-election. So we are talking about the Newport West by-election once again, and I am joined by two members of the SDP who are fielding a candidate in this election. I have to say the candidate did try to attend, and unfortunately I wasn't able to make it at the same time as him, so we've had to make do without that, but I don't want it to be thought that he wasn't willing to come along. He certainly was, and unfortunately we just couldn't quite make the times match up. But I'm joined by William Clouston, who is the leader of the SDP, and also by Richard Plackett, a senior officer from the party. Hello to both of you.
Hello.
Hello there.
So let's start with a history lesson. We all know the SDP of the 1980s. How has that evolved to what you are today?
There are basically three phases in the SDP. The original phase was when the party was established in 1981 by the Gang of Four. It's largely a Labour Party offshoot, although there was one Conservative MP involved. And so that first iteration lasted basically through the 83 general election, which we did pretty well in, only 1.5% behind the Labour Party, but alas, because of the electoral system with far fewer seats. And then you had another phase up to the 87 election, and again we were in a national alliance with the Liberal Party. And after the relative disappointment of the 87 election, was pressure to merge the two parties. And at that point, what we would describe as a sort of purist social democrats resisted that, because liberalism and social democracy is very distinct. They're not the same thing, despite having an electoral pact. And purists stayed with David Owen, and so you've got another version of the SDP, Owen's SDP, and then you've got what became the Liberal Democrats. And the party fought on for the best part of 3.5 years until about 1990. April of 1990, Owen left the field effectively. Not enough progress was made, I think, from his point of view. And at that point, the party ceased to be a national party. But the funny thing is, it didn't go away. And the present SDP, which we call the enduring SDP, is basically the grassroots party throughout the country. And it was very interesting. You can decide to walk away. You can decide to not carry on as a major politician nationally. But you can't close local branches down. So branches in East Yorkshire, South Wales and Midlands, Scotland and so on continued. And it's out of that branch network that we're now having a national resurgence. So that's basically.
So for a period, you didn't necessarily have branches everywhere, but you had activity in certain locations.
Very interesting thing. So if a strong branch like East Yorkshire, that branch is the same branch back to 81, and we've got a regional network which has one or two members, not huge numbers, but go all the way back to 81. So there's contiguous. Very interesting. The flame was kept alive. So literally individuals. So the name, the philosophy and the branch network and individuals have kept it going right from the start.
I think more recently, last year, William joined the party as leader. William was a member of the original SDP in the 1980s. So it's very important to stress we do have links with the original party and strong policy links. Our social market economic policy derives directly in a modern setting from the policy of the SDP, the social market policy of the 1980s. Many of us joined the party because of that philosophy, and William wrote a new declaration last year which espoused our principles, our social democratic principles. For people like me joining the party last year, that new declaration and the principles of the original SDP as written in that declaration are incredibly important.
And you relatively recently picked up an MEP as well.
Yeah, Patrick O'Flynn joined, and obviously we have theoretical lists of parliamentarians that we like and are on our page politically, and Patrick was the number one target. As you know, a lot of people in UKIP, UKIP really was centred on a single issue, which is fine, but because of that it was a coalition of people with very liberal, neoliberal economics and some libertarians, and then some sort of more conservative outlook, and then some centrists. And actually Patrick was a prominent economic centrist, so he was on our target list, and we were very, very lucky to get him across, and he gave us a great boost. We had a big membership boost from that, so great. And the interesting thing is, and it's I always like to mention this, but the Liberal Democrats have one MEP. And the Social Democratic Party has one MEP. That's very interesting.
If you look at where the membership's coming on more recently, people are joining us from every party. So I'm ex-Labour, so Labour Party member for a long time. People are joining from the Conservatives who are unhappy with the Conservative stance on progress on Brexit. People are joining from the Liberal Democrats who don't like the Liberal Democrats stance on Brexit. Yeah. So and most importantly of all, we've got many, many people joining who've never been a member of a political party at all. We're trying to appeal to those people who are disillusioned with politics and looking for something fresh in a new party. Yeah. So people joining from each and every party.
This particular, Rod Little joined recently, and he's,
oh right,
yeah. So he's given us a big boost. We had another boost, but of course he was associated with Blue Labour, which is an interesting intellectual idea Morris Glassman originated. And actually, we are philosophically very, very close to the Blue Labour position, and we've done very well. Michael Merrick came along, so we've got quite a few Blue Labour thinkers have just joined us. Because remember, Blue Labour was sort of intellectual idea inside a very large party. But it depends what you want to do. If you want to influence directly and put this program, this sort of Blue Labour or Red Tory, Philip Blond type idea, well, there are differences between the two, and there are differences between those two and us. But if you want to put that to the public, you have to have an entity to do it. You have to have a political party to do it. And if that's your type of politics, then the SDP is the political party for you.
If you want social democratic policies, you need to have a social democratic party.
That's it.
And that's why we're here.
Yeah.
There's quite a lot to cover in all that. let's tick off Brexit first and foremost.
you pitch yourself as being the only party in this by-election, and there are plenty to choose from, but the only party in this by-election who is centre-ground and pro clean Brexit, would that be your terminology?
Yeah,
a World Trade Organization rules Brexit?
I think that's a very fair description of where we are now. Remember that the party's policy has been that we wanted a good trade deal and a good, I guess, a good withdrawal agreement. But I think where we are, we wouldn't support the Barnier May deal. Like, it's just a profoundly bad deal. It's, in a way, it's the worst of all worlds. So where we are now, I think the only option is to go for a WTO, what we describe as a clean Brexit. I think that has widespread support where we are present.
Okay. And looking at the what you were describing earlier, really, the sort of social democratic model, that fascinates me to a certain extent, because I am one of these people who believes that the two large parties are, well, I think Labour probably went off a cliff in one direction. The Conservatives have been edging to an extreme, well, not necessarily an extreme, but to a limited market at a time when actually there is an awful lot of centre ground out
there.
Yeah. Now, I do typically fall into the trap, which I think a lot of commentators do, to be fair, of seeing that centre ground as being market orientated, socially liberal. Your approach is slightly more to the sort of centre-right on social issues. Would that be fair?
I think that's very fair.
And more, as you mentioned, social market orientated in terms of economics. So, I suppose first of all, do you want to expand on any of what I've just said, having taken all the words from you? But also, how is, with that in mind, what are you particularly looking at in terms of target areas, of target voter types? I mean, not necessarily referencing this precise geography of Newport West on this occasion, but who do you see as your potential growth area?
Well, just to explain the social market, the idea is quite a simple one in that it's basically a view of the economy which doesn't privilege either the private sector or the public sector. The basic idea is that these things are not opponents. And the problem with the two establishment parties and the sort of cartel we have is that everyone knows that the Labour Party have a preference for the public sector. And some of their membership, and certainly some of the Momentum membership now, are actually actively hostile to the private sector. And that's a major problem. On the other side, you have the Conservatives who, to be fair, you know, pro-market, but they really want the smaller state. Not all of them, you know, but many of them want the smaller state they can pretty much get. And I think the public understand that. But the SDP's position is that this is basically a false dichotomy. It's false to say that a pro-market position relies you to think that you can't have a strong and active state. That is just false. I mean, I think one requires the other. So that's basically our position, and it's a position which goes all the way back to the 1980s, and the social market model was something we took up and promoted, and I think it's an idea that we basically own.
Yeah, if I give an example, so since 1979 and Margaret Thatcher, and there's been a belief carried on actually by the Blair Labour government largely that the state can't do very much in this country, that we should leave everything to the private sector. A great example would be in housing. We have a housing shortage in this country, a critical housing shortage. The state used to build 150,000 houses a year, council houses. It fell in 2010, we were building less than 1,000. And there is no reason in this country why the state can't build council houses, should be doing it to provide affordable housing. And it's just one good example of something the state could be doing that it isn't. So we do believe that in a strong government, a government that can do things. We also believe, obviously, you need a private sector, you need investment. And so it isn't A or B, but we need to promote both the strong state and the strong private sector in a way that neither of the major parties do.
There's quite a lot of academic research which is backing up this kind of position at the moment. I mean, you mentioned Philip Blond, who actually came down to Newport and gave a talk last year, and Maurice Glassman, Matthew Goodwin, of course, is also focused on this. In fact, I remember a video of his being quite popular where he was sort of actually pitching, you know, if there's really a centre party that's going to be out there to talk about it, it needs to be of that sort of social democratic nature as opposed to a metropolitan liberal.
Yeah, I think Matt's
entity.
Right about that. And I think the data supports his basic position. That's where, if there's room, if there's a gap, as it were. But I mean, we're not really cynically looking at that, but it just happens to be that the gap is there. I think there is widespread support for a centre-left economic programme. And the security and just an active state that wants to roll up its sleeves and do so. One of the worst aspects of the last sort of 20, 30 years has been a sort of demoralization in terms of what the state can and should do. And that's affected both parties. Actually, it's a singular lack of belief. And so we have a national policy of rail nationalization. In fact, the state does the heavy lifting in it anyway, in terms of infrastructure provision, and it's a complete lack of belief in this country that we have a government that's quite happy to have state running our railways, but it's the French state or the German state or the Dutch state.
The franchise
and it's bizarre.
Companies, yeah.
No,
they're...
utterly bizarre, and the idea that you can't have a British railway system, which is an emblem of British engineering and achievement. Which would have widespread support amongst the travelling public if it served the public. We're not going back to the 70s. It's got to serve the public. But there's no, absolutely no belief in state action of that kind. And the funny thing is, I think Matt Goodwin is right. You go to the southeast, there's massive support for this. And it's only an ideological objection that particularly on the right, they just can't stomach the idea that the state should do it. And I think they're flat wrong.
And it is true that globalisation has increased inequality. It's increased labour mobility for the people at the top, and there is more inequality. And that's why I think the economic pendulum has swung to the left. People want the economy to work for everyone, not just for a few. And it is right that the government should be active to promote fair outcomes for all.
Interesting that you're talking about nationalisation, particularly of railway lines. Obviously, not quite to that extent, but in Wales, we've got a situation where the water company is run on a not-for-profit basis.
Yeah.
The new railway franchise is being run on a not-for-profit basis. Do you see elements of the Welsh model being an example that could be rolled out elsewhere?
In part I do, although I think water is a more complex industry. But because it is, it shows some examples. I mean, for instance, there are water provision in Scotland is substantially state run.
Yeah.
And I think, again, the diametrically opposed example is Thames Water. Where if you look at the history of since privatisation and the returns some of the venture capital companies have made, remember that all of that return ultimately, I mean you can add finance to it and it'll gear, your returns will be affected by that, but ultimately all of the return comes from water rate payers in London who there's no social accountability for the model. And I think certainly there would be a case. I think we've said in a recent policy document that we feel that water sits uncomfortably in the private sector. But you've got to be practical. I don't think anyone's going to have a programme to nationalise the whole of the water industry in the UK overnight, which is why presently the shop window nationalisation is rail.
But in the case of water, we will strengthen regulation. We will ensure that companies aren't making undeserved profits from national utilities.
Yeah. But your point is that the public sector model does work in the UK.
Yeah.
It does.
So we believe in that. But we believe in a strong private sector too. We believe in investment incentives for companies to invest in areas like South Wales. And we believe in this strong system, which you might see in, say, Germany or places in Scandinavia, where you have a strong private sector and a strong state.
Do you see the fact that Jeremy Corbyn is leader of the Labour Party as an opportunity for an SDP resurgence?
We do, and it's very interesting that, the people that kept, the Social Democrats that kept the party alive through the whole of the new Labour era, it's heroic. Because actually the macro position for the party then was very, very difficult. Very, very difficult because you had, I think certainly our position economically is more to the left than New Labour, but it was a very difficult time. I think now, presently, it's an ideal position. I don't think it's an accident the SDP is presently resurgent. I mean, we're putting on literally hundreds of members a week.
I'm going to ask you about members, because I put the new on the spot about this and asked how many members they had.
In the thousands.
Okay.
Yeah. It's growing.
It's growing very fast.
Very fast. Hundreds a week.
Okay.
So, yeah, decent. What did Renew say?
Listen back to the podcast.
Okay.
I think, I might be wrong on this, I think they said membership was in hundreds, supporters was in thousands.
Yeah.
We're talking about members.
Talking about members. Thousands in members, low thousands, and then supporters, certainly tens of thousands.
There are lots of parties out there at the moment who claim membership, which is just people having replied to an email and so on. We are talking about people who
proper
are paid
members
up members
with,
of the party.
With membership cards, yeah.
Fair point. Let's talk about Newport West then. What are the priority issues for this campaign for you?
So we're talking about the M4 relief road, which we are in support of. We think traffic congestion is a major issue for the people in Newport, and anyone trying to get through the tunnel in peak hours would understand completely what we're talking about. We think it's essential for Newport and for South Wales generally that people can get to work and that goods can get to market, and we think the relief road needs to be built. Another big issue is homelessness and urban regeneration. If you walk down Commercial Street, it's a sad sight these days. And we've got real policies at the SDP to combat homelessness through council house building, as I've described, through hostel places, through addiction services to treat the underlying problems of some of the people who unfortunately are on the streets.
Looking ahead a little bit, will we see the SDP contesting assembly elections?
Yeah, I think we're building a series of regional parties, and that's going ahead now. So we intend to. I mean, one of the reasons that it's particularly attractive for us is that it has a more favourable electoral system.
Yes, it might become even more favourable if the current reforms are adopted.
Yeah, and so actually London Assembly, Welsh Assembly and Scotland are very, very important for the SDP going forward. So yes, certainly on the radar.
Okay, that will be interesting to see how that develops.
Yeah.
I think I've covered everything I would like to. It's fascinating, though, because to have the attention of a whole range of parties in this constituency at a time when I think a lot of people are throwing their hands in the air with a bit of despair about the big two, maybe big three, depending on how you draw the lines. It's really interesting to have a bit of insight as to how some of the other parties are looking at things. And this sort of overarching momentum to the idea that, I shouldn't say momentum, should I? That has other connotations
in politics these
days.
Yes,
no. Towards a centre, even if there's an interesting debate about what that centre looks like.
So we've talked to people today and a lot of them have said, we don't want to vote Conservative or Labour. We might not vote at all. And our message to people is please do vote. If we're going to change things in Westminster, we need to get new parties, new politicians into Westminster. And that's what the SDP is all about.
I think if you're offered 11 candidates, you've got to find a reason to at least vote for the least worst, haven't you?
Exactly. Yeah, no, you've got to vote.
Richard William, thank you very much.
Pleasure. Absolute pleasure. Thank you.